Welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast. This is Adam Russell. Colin is out of town. He's on a conference for retailers. I'll just introduce everybody. To my left,
Jim Beck.
Jeremy Dan.
And calling in from Cleveland.
This would be at Nick Borelli.
And we have a special guest with us today, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
This is comic book rapper guy Adam Warrock. How's it going, guys?
Going well.
Book rapper guy.
That's right. Something like that.
That probably looks good on a business card, right?
Yes. It looks good on a tax return. Of course, they're not going to audit me or anything.
You're fine. you've been getting some real like national press lately from a couple different angles. It's pretty sweet. The new album drops in I think March 1st.
February 13th and March 1st. The reason you probably saw that on Twitter is because that's when they get shipped out if you don't pre-order it, because I'm going to be on tour after that. So.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
I pre-ordered, so whatever.
February 13th is the release date.
Got it.
There you go.
Did you catch where the title is from?
God Loves, Man Kills. Was it? Which graphic novel was that in the Marvel Epic?
Three,
I think.
Three or four.
We know.
Actually, I thought it was on the shelf over here.
Well, that's not the graphic novel.
Oh, that's not the. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's. That took me a while to find like an appropriate title. That's also a famous comic book. I usually like to use like little pull quotes or whatever, or taglines, I guess, from the covers. But I couldn't find one, so I just found that old like the old panel of Reverend Stryker pointing at Nightcrawler and being all xenophobic. And I was
the juxtaposition of the that image, and then having it switched with you, and then like the connotations that you can look at between maybe your life and like X-Men. It's pretty sweet. It says it all in like one image. I think that's I don't know how long you took thinking about that, but it resonates pretty instantly.
Took a long Google search, Google images search to find inspiration. It's usually how it works, basically, is you just search for like some sort of X-Men panel and then like find a good one that you want to use.
Actually, as a graphic artist, that's kind of what I do throughout the day too for inspiration. I just sit there and search Google.
Yeah,
and I do social media and blogging, and I'm a marketing director, so stealing images and repurposing them is part of my day too.
Well, see, I was always told when I went to school that there's a big difference from actually stealing and becoming inspired by.
Right.
So I'll go with that one.
That's right. It's a loving homage, just like all my other albums have been so far. But yeah, I went for a little bit. I mean, like, it's obvious to comic fans, but I think less people catch it than the EP that I released, which is This Man, This Monster, which was like the Thing cover of Fantastic Four.
I got that. I got a couple things signed by Stan Lee, and it was that cover. I got my. It's funny. My wedding save the date is the image of Peter Parker leaving his costume in the trash from Amazing 50.
Yes.
And, like, all the copy on that, from Stan, like, about a man giving up, childish things and all that, like, it worked for me. It's almost like the same process you went through. So I had Stan sign that, and he goes, "Did you really use this?" And I said, "Yep." And he goes, "So I was part of your wedding." And I said, "Definitely." And he said, "Oh, that's cool. I didn't even get any cake." I was like, man, he's so funny. Like, he's so, like... I don't know. He's never changed. Like, he's not been, not the... Like, I've met him three different times, and he's just... I don't know.
And then you walked away, and he was like, "I still didn't get any cake." Yeah, thought I was joking.
He just wanted cake and was asking for it in general to nobody in particular.
Who doesn't?
He's just asking everybody for cake.
You know what's funny is that I was just talking about this with one of my friends recently. And with what I do, which is basically riff on comic book characters or stories or tropes or whatever, and turn them into rap songs. And I'm always astounded at how fertile ground Spider-Man is like, in every single kind of life applicable way, like that, like I could write tons and tons of songs with Spider-Man as the basis of it in some way. And I don't really feel like that about any other, like, property in all of comics.
That's fascinating. And,
like, you what?
That's fascinating. I mean, you'd think there was, like, oh, you could talk about Batman all day, you know, Superman, whatever. But if you think about it, like, there's no real-world applications because those guys don't grow up.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, there's so much about, like, Spider-Man where, you know, it's like he's the skinny kid who becomes strong. He's the smart kid who uses his brain. He had this unrequited love with this super hot girl. And then, like, got her, but then didn't get her. And then it's the whole family issue. And he had a job. And it's just, like, there's so much fertile ground that I'm always amazed with. And, like, not just me, but other people who, you know, write about comics or they do comic, like, webcomic parody kind of stuff is, like, Spider-Man is forever the most fertile ground for, like, any kind of inspiration. And, like, that's not even to say, like I love Spider-Man to death, but he's not my favorite. That's not my favorite book or favorite character by any means. But there's really no other property that I can ever think of that has that much potential in it as Spider-Man. And I think that it shows how, like, classic it is to me. Like, it's just – it's always got this, like, special place in my – in the pantheon of comics to me. And, I mean, even with that new rebooted movie, that trailer still, like, got me emotionally when I saw it, like, the new trailer come out, even though – you know, I'm sure a lot of people want to hate on it. I was just like, oh, man, I'm totally in, even though I may not have been all the way in going up to it. But I was just like, oh, I just love Spider-Man, like seeing the Spider-Man things play out.
I think it's so much that Spider-Man – I'm actually a big Spider-Man fan anyways. But I think it's because I've always said that Spider-Man and Peter Parker are kind of like two different things. And
yeah, that's
Peter Parker is such a – I think if anything, he's the most real character Marvel has, you know, that it just Peter – you know, he's so real to, you know, everyday life.
All the characters in the Spider-Man books are so genuine that you could read a book just about them without Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man's the biggest property of Marvel, that's true. But, like, beyond that, I think he encapsulates what makes Marvel different. 100%. You could almost put – I mean, you could put Thor in the DCU, fine. You could put – maybe the Fantastic Four in there. I mean, I guess you could call them challengers. But you could put a bunch of – but you put Spider-Man in the DCU, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the real-life problems.
Makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that a lot.
Anyways, but, I was going to say the first time
I saw you perform was in the Cleveland. It was the second show of the tour with Lars and MC Chris, Megaran. And when I saw that bill, I was like, that's like – the nerdcore all-star lineup.
Yeah, I mean, that was all Chris. You know, Chris put that – MC Chris put that bill together and wanted a very nerd rap-centric tour. And I think because of that, we had a really – I mean, it was the most enthusiastic, supportive crowds that I've ever seen in my life. And
I've seen him six times, you know, and I've seen him in a couple different cities. And, like, you know, there's – different acts with it, and I looked at that act on paper and I was like, well, yeah, this makes a lot of sense, you know, it's like, you know, there's a lot of overlap, whatever, and then you see the show and you're like, everyone's coming at it from a completely different angle. The Venn diagram is not four circles on top of each other, there's like four circles meeting in the middle, you know?
Yeah, and it was really nice too, because there were a lot of people who, you know, maybe weren't all huge comic fans, people who weren't like huge Mega Man nerds, and, you know,
right.
Like, they all came to each act, and, like, you know, you always go into tours like that, and you're a little bit scared about how people are going to accept you, just because, you know, what I do is very, I mean, it's rap, and it's nerdy, but it's very different from what MC Chris does, you know?
Yeah, and it's so different than what Lars does, and it's different than what Random or Megaran, like,
yeah.
it's all really, you think, like, and one of the criticisms people give, even people that are dubbed it, with, you know, with when they say that those that embrace the label nerdcore, those that shun it, those are like kind of like whatever. It's not like I guess it can help to encapsulate what people are doing in one word, but that's not it. You know, like everyone's doing their own thing, and this is just something that people need to throw labels on things.
Yeah, and it was a really great tour, and we all had a great time. I mean, like, it's the kind of healthy competition because I was friends with Mega Ran and K Murdoch, and then I became friends with, you know, Chris's crew and MC Lars's crew, and every night we were all watching each other, and we kind of all knew that we had to step our game up because we were all very high energy acts on stage. So it was, definitely the greatest like performing experience I ever had. It was grueling. I mean, 44 shows in 51 yeah. days is pretty hardcore, but it was the best preparation I've ever had.
I was following that, and I was like, every single day was somewhere different. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, we had many many nights where you know, I took a little nap at the merch table while other acts were on stage, holding my phone in my lap with a hat down, so you thought that I was looking at my phone if you just walked by. But really, I had earplugs in, and I was taking a little quick cat nap because we were so, so tired.
That's awesome. That's really cool. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting, like, everyone's background before they got into, you know, what they're doing now, especially those that, you know, for touring. Like, I think, like, Mega Ran was a teacher, and, like, Chris was in animation, and you were a lawyer, right?
Yeah, totally makes sense, right? I was a practicing lawyer. I went to law school and everything, and it's people think – I don't know which one they think is more crazy, that I try to be a full-time rapper or that I used to be a lawyer. I think each one wins out on a different day, depending on it.
I mean, it's like what's interesting is Colin, whose store you know, the show's on. It's you know, he's like, he founded the whole you know, this podcast. He was a lawyer, and people tell him, you know, he hears that story too. It's like he owns a comic store, and if people are to go in, like, it's a really like clean, upscale looking comic store. Like, it's not the typical comic store. And then people talk to him, and he's very well spoken, and you know, he. All this stuff that you kind of like bucks the stereotype of your traditional local comic shop owner, and then he says, like, well, I used to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, all right. Like, why are you doing this? It's like, because I used to be a lawyer.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that caught me when I first came here, when he first opened. Just how clean this place was. It's bright blue, crazy? Superman blue. There is no comic book store, and I think we've all been to as many comic book stores here.
This place is a showcase.
This does not look like your everyday comic book store.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it's just, you know, some of the stereotype of, like, your comic book, Simpsons comic book guy kind of, you know, stereotype that's out there. Like, those guys, I mean, I hate to say there's a reason that stereotype exists, but I've been to so many different comic stores in the last, like, 25 years, and, like, it's they're out there and they're not a minority.
Yeah,
you know, people that just don't have any social skills or whatever, and you know, what this is like. I don't know what they did before, but I've heard people say that, and then as soon as he says, "Well, I was a lawyer, and my wife's got a doctorate," and you're like, "Oh, okay," and you own a comic store, and it's like, "Yeah, I do what I want to do because I love it."
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know, I mean, because it's like, the more that you get older, because it seems like everybody goes through a period where they are really into comics, and then when they go to college or something around that time, they stop reading comics for like 3 years or something. I think yeah. I've like, that's like a phenomenon that's happened throughout like a lot of people that I know.
I never had that break.
You never
had? I did.
Never
had the break.
I know exactly what you're talking about, Adam.
Yeah. And then everybody has that story about how they got back into it because, you know, you looked at a book or you looked at a story and you were reading some probably like a trade at Borders or something where there was like a gigantic section and you were just like studying or something. Like for me, it was Hellboy and it was Mike Mignola's art. And, you know, you were like, oh man, it's like, even though you were a huge fan and you respected the art form, like you still get surprised at the fact that like, you're like, man, this is like beautiful art. And these are like really mature stories. And you can get invested in it just as much as you can in, like, goofy television or, like, movies that are just as quote-unquote immature or whatever. And I think a lot of people who enjoy both those sensory kind of experiences, you know, can easily be a grown-up, in quote-unquote, and still be huge comic book fans because it's not all, like, you're just trying to relive some sort of nostalgic thing. Like, there's a lot of... Like, even if you don't read Marvel and DC, there's a lot of indie stuff and there's a lot of really great stuff that's out there that I could point anybody to. Like, you could point anyone to, like, Habibi or, like, Infinite Kung Fu or things like that and just be like, read this. And they should be impressed. If they're not impressed, then they have a problem.
I like to call those the comics I point my wife to.
The comics you point your wife to.
I read comics more than I would watch television or movies, and I'm always surprised that I'll watch a movie or a particular show, and you're thinking, the writer, the creative people behind this have to be comic book people or have some, you know,
there's a lot of them
influenced
anymore.
By comic books, because you'll see similarities in the story and say, wait a minute, the X-Men already did that.
Yeah.
But the show's heralded as some kind of new idea.
And, you know, I've seen that a lot between the movies coming out since they first started the movies, and all of a sudden, you see them a lot more merging of writers into television and stuff like that. I mean, a lot of comic book writers worked on Lost.
Right.
You know.
Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah.
You know, just one. But what's crazy about, you know, the reason that I think you think that other mediums are, you know, sometimes derivative, I think it's because... And this is the reason that I love comics probably the most, is that it, as far as storytelling goes, it's fairly pure. There's not a, you know, I mean, there's editorial, sure, you know, in indies there's less. But, I mean, you think about how many people are in the room and how many people you have to make happy with a story in television and movie, it would boggle your mind. The hundreds of people that have their say and, you know, and the compromises that are made. Where, you know, a good comic, like, there's not a lot of people that have their hands all over it in comparison to any other medium.
Yeah.
Except for music, where, again, especially now, the way the music is, you know, like, what you're doing, Adam, like, there's, like, who's telling you what you have to do?
I mean, not the U.S. Copyright Act, by any means, that's for sure.
Clearly, with that cover.
No, it's funny because, a lot of people, like, I've actually gotten into full-blown arguments with people who are traditional music industry people, or they're musicians who are from an earlier age. And I always find it funny that they argue with me, because it's like, you know, like, I don't, like, I try to be humble and stuff, and I'm like, I think I'm doing okay. You know, like, you don't need to change anything. But I started out doing music when I knew a ton of people who did webcomics. And my, to this day, the model for my site and my business model is a webcomics business model. Like, I release a lot of weekly free content. Once in a while, I'll compile that into some sort of bigger release or special, and then every once in a while, you buy an album in the same way that a webcomic posts every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and every once in a while, you buy a book or you buy a t-shirt. And, like, I always thought, like, my site was going to be, like, a blog in music form, or, like, a sketchbook in music form, the same way that, like, an artist site. Away, because that's like, I didn't hang out with other indie musicians, I didn't hang out with other rappers, I hung out with people who made comics and loved comics, and so that was where I started from. So, like, in the same way that, like, you have a person who's sitting at a drafting table and drawing, like, a webcomic, and they, you know, started it up from nothing, like, you know, and then it grew to something bigger, like a PvP or Penny Arcade, it's the same way that I kind of did mine, where it's just me in front of a microphone in my closet, my walk-in closet, literally. Just making music about whatever and posting it and blogging and kind of reaching out and having a very personal experience. And, like, people, like, a lot of music people don't get that, because they're just like, why do you release so much free music? Why do you release music that's not perfect, or, like, that's not fully thought out? It's like, well, that's because that's not what I'm doing. I'm not trying to do what you do. I'm trying to do what all these webcomics people are doing, which is, like, I think another thing that added to a lot of people getting back into comics is because with the internet and so many of us sitting in an office and staring at a computer screen, is that we all started reading, like, webcomics. Like, I know I did for a large period of my legal job was reading people's webcomics.
Absolutely. I tried to do one, like, twice, and the last time I stopped was, like, 2003. So I got into it, like, 99 through 2003. My friend that was drawing, I think, still does it. But, that's a really interesting angle, you know, because... as you were saying that, I was thinking, I'm like, man, I don't go to performers' websites often. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's just, you know, what, tour dates, and I'm good. I have other things that monitor tour dates for me and just blast emails to me. I'm set. But, like, I go back to yours because it's like there's going to be new content. You know, I'm gonna be able to, like, find something. And, like, I do marketing for a living, and that's a pretty powerful thing to be able to create. You know, sort of a dependence on a site for content. And then as you're releasing things, you're letting us know about the new album, and I mean, I'm giving you my point of view as someone that's actually consuming it. It works because it's like the album itself feels so, like it feels like an event. It's almost like comic books where it's like I'm getting the the individual stories and then they tease the event as it comes up.
Yeah, and it's funny because I always wonder about that line between oversaturation, you know, and not wanting to blast people with too much stuff. It's kind of why I did the things that I've done in January, which have gotten me the largest amount of attention that I've ever gotten in my career, was I was trying to reach to different, like, different audiences, different market shares.
That was the question I was going to ask you. Is like, it seems like you're casting like nets in so many different directions, and you know, like all these different like tropisms or these different fan bases that are fairly, you know, organized and hungry. But there's no, again, I'm looking back to like a Venn diagram of like people, there's not a lot, like there's not a ton of overlap. I mean, it seems fairly, you know, this looks pretty smart. I mean, if you were to do, you know, like the New Warriors EP and then, you know, give that out and then do like, the X Factor on top of that, like if that was your move in January, you'd get the same group twice.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because like, you know, I love comics, and I'm very happy being the world's foremost comic book rapper, which I always say it's kind of a joke by now, because somebody said that in a review of one of my albums, and I laughed because I was like, that's kind of like saying you're the king of a country that doesn't really exist. Like, like I'm not really competing with anyone who only does comic book rap, so like, I know that it was a very high compliment he was trying to pay me, but I like, the semantics of it is like, you are the greatest person who is the only person that does this. I'm like, oh. But no, I mean, like, I'm so happy to be in this community and kind of, like, see how enthusiastic people are. But when I started doing music, I was, like, you know, I always try to tell people, and it's like a slow, subtle rebranding that I've kind of been like, you know, I'm just a guy who makes music about stuff that I'm really enthusiastic about, you know? And at the time that I started making music, I was very enthusiastic about comics because I ran a podcast back then about comics. I was friends with so many people who made comics. I was going to comic cons and helping people out and, you know, very immersed in that world. And, you know, like, I'm just as big a fan of television as I am of sports, as I am of video games. And, you know, like, I would love to make music about all that stuff. So when I started making, like, the Parks and Recreation EP or the Browncoats mixtape, or the Mass Effect EP, like, there is some thought in it, because it's like, you know, once in a while I'll think of something that I'd like to do, and I'll be like, well, I don't really want to do that, because it's so much like something I've already done.
Yeah.
But it's also like, all those came about because I was literally enjoying those things at the moment that I thought to make the EP or the mixtape, because I was watching Parks and Recreation for like 3 days straight, or I was, or I reread New Warriors Classic, because I just bought like both trades from Amazon, and like, so they come around pretty organically. Like, it's never really a thing where I'm like, what would, you know, like, what new, like, fiat can I try to invade today or whatever? Like, what new fiefdom can I cultivate? But, like, at some point that probably will happen when I run out of ideas. But
you're doing it. I mean, you're getting those groups, you know, whether it's, you know, not a, you know, just a ploy to court those groups or not, you know, it seems, I mean, I think it seems fairly organic if I look at the process of how I would do it. Like, when it's almost like a high fidelity type thing. Like, I'm passionate about pop culture. It's how I view the world. So it's not so much that, like, it's a, you know, something that I think is something to take advantage of, or something that, you know, is, like, shticky. It's what I'm passionate about. So, like, I get it.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I was trying to think of an example. Like, you should have seen the list of ideas that me and Michael Kill of the Thought Criminals, well, I guess it was before Michael Kill was involved, but the list of ideas I had for that eventually became the Browncoats mixtape was like, it was like the most ridiculous list. And then, like, we have a follow-up actually coming out this summer, which we already started on, and the website's already kind of built, and we're just waiting to announce it. March 1st, this might be an exclusive, but March 1st, I think we're going to announce the new mixtape that will come out this summer. And the list of things that we were thinking about doing was like so crazy. I think there were like, so one of the ideas was like a Pinkerton mixtape, Weezer Pinkerton mixtape. I think another one, what I really wanted to do was a Huey Lewis and the News mixtape. But then I was like, yeah, who really cares? Like, it's a funny thing, but I don't think there's really like a rabid fan base of Huey Lewis and the News people out there.
I mean, there's people that like Irony, and there's people that like Back to the Future.
Yeah.
So you get those people together.
Yeah, and I mean, it's
probably some like 50-year-old bored housewives.
Hey, someone's got to get them on, you know.
But like, you know, like, I think that the bigger that it got, the more that you start to like second guess a lot. Cause like, we're very happy with the subject that we picked for the new one, but there was definitely some others that were very, ambitious that we probably shied away from. Cause we're like, I don't really know if people are going to react as well as the last one. So we should probably go with something a little safer. So, I mean, there's like, you know, there's always conversations like that, but, you try to keep it close enough. Because, I mean, like, you know, music or any art, like, that's for sale, that's commercial in any way, it's always going to be a little bit of, like, well, how is this going to be marketed, and how are people going to receive this, and how can I get it out there, so.
It's all I think about all day, so don't, I mean, it's like, how does this sell? But at the same point, like, there's so many people that, like, live where, in a place of, where pop culture is how you know, express yourself or what, you know, gets you excited. And, you know, those things make you excited. So why wouldn't you know, express your excitement?
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because you just hope that people will give it a chance. Because once you listen to the Parks and Rec EP or once you listen to the Mass Effect EP, hopefully you can tell that I enjoy those things and I'm not just reading a Wikipedia page and writing stuff just to get that audience. Like, it's stuff that I truly, really do love. And it's just always like, you always got to get over that barricade of like people being like, well, why are you doing this? And it's such a weird question because you're just like, because I just did one day because it was fun. Like, but like, there's a lot of people who are like, why are you doing this? Like, why would you make a thing about that? And then there's a lot of people who are all, like, I mean, there's people who, and man, I always talk about this guy. I'm sure he doesn't listen to any interviews that I'm ever on, but there's a guy on Twitter who constantly is like, there's no place for rap in comic books. And I'm just like, why, like, what does that even mean? Like,
what does that mean?
Yeah, what is that?
Like, he's just like, I don't see the market for it. I don't think people would want that. And I'm like, well,
then
but
shouldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, why does this matter to you if there are people who do like it? And it just makes him so angry. Like, I just retweet him without replying. Because it's a tactic I picked up from a comedian, Doug Benson, who like retweets all the people like sending them hate tweets. And
Doug talks about that on like every podcast he's in. There's like one guy specifically too.
Yeah, and it's just like it's such a weird question, but that's something that you always get with like nerd or geek culture that's not the source material. Like, no one will ever be like, why are you making a comic about a kid who gets bit by a radioactive spider and can climb walls?
Yeah.
Like, but then they're like, why are you making a song about a kid who got bit by a radioactive spider? And you're like, well, because you like that, and you like this.
Well, if they didn't, they never would have a theme, the Spider-Man. So.
That's right.
Well, the thing is, a lot of that stuff, you know, you have to find some sort of inspiration for it. That's like really a odd question for somebody to even ask, because there's no answer to that.
Some people's worlds are just so narrow that, like, they don't understand things that aren't exactly like the thing that they just saw.
Yeah.
The best thing is that, you know, with the recent releases in it, you know, I hope that it's a sign of, you know, I'm in the right direction, is that people... I've gotten a lot less comments. Like, when I first started out, I got a lot of comments that were like, man, I thought this was going to be terrible, but it's not. And I'm like, oh, thanks, I guess.
That's a great compliment.
Yeah, there's a name for something like that, where it's a compliment and it's not at the same time. Yeah. It's not a backhanded compliment, but like...
But you might as well take it.
But now it's like people are like, this is awesome. And I like the fact that people are... You know, like, it gives you a reason to be enthusiastic about something that deserves it. Like, I'm never going to make a song about something I don't like. Like,
right.
I'm trying to think of like a comic that I just hate. Like, there's a comic I hate. Like, I'm never gonna make a Tarot Witch, the Black Rose song or whatever. I might
for ironic reasons. They're safe.
Which books, Nick?
The Blue Water.
Oh.
I want like a Justin Bieber one shot. Those bio books are like the worst. So before we get into like some comic talk, what's exciting you about the new album? Like what do you think that people are going to react to the most?
It's weird because like I think it's the first time that it's the first album that I've ever made that was after such a prolonged tour. So a lot of it is focused on songs that will come across live well, because the one thing that I learned about being on tour was that there are a lot of songs that I really like and that other people really like that just don't work well live. And it's a whole different animal when you think about a song live, and I just had never done a tour that long. So this album was very much made with the intention of going out live and doing these songs in front of people and doing it on stage. And because of that, it has a lot more higher energy. I think it's a little bit more fun than stuff in the past. And it's definitely a little more chest thumping than my previous stuff, because I had a good year. So if you like a little swagger in your hip hop, it's a little more like, you know, it's a little more get your swag on kind of stuff.
But that stuff works really well in live, you know. I mean, like that kind of energy, you know, like when you can feed off of it, and it just like pumps you up and hypes you up, like while you're on stage. So like I totally get that. Like Chris has got a bunch of songs like that too that are just like, you know. I don't know if like Frontalot can really pull that off in the same way.
Frontalot has his own specific charisma on stage that I was lucky enough to see Frontalot live for the first time in person in December, and he is as good as advertised in terms of like being live for a totally different kind of.
Oh, I can just watch him. I mean, I've seen him I think 4 times now, and like every single time, like he just brings so much energy, and his whole crew. I mean, like they. Like, they're just having fun, and it just exudes it. Like, it's just, like, his shows are so positive and so, like, affirming. And then I look around the crowd, and it's, like, such a wide, diverse group of people that never come out for anything else in their lives, you know? Like, it's so cool. Like, these people are, like, such a, like, motley crew, and then they're all, like, you know, breaking it down. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, it's funny because whenever I go out and do a show, I very much try to bring a lot of energy, and I try, you know, I come from a punk and hardcore background.
Yeah, me too.
I listened to all that early Epitaph stuff and a lot of pop punk, and I listened to a lot of, like, you know, Agnostic Front and Machine Head and Biohazard stuff back in the day. And, you know, for a lot of my life, I thought rap shows were boring. You know, like, I get it, like, because I played guitar for a lot of my life, and I like seeing live drums, I like seeing people jump around and smash things, and like, so like, I try to bring a live show that will be interesting and high energy, and I think these songs are a little bit more, like, there's always going to be like a punk element to it, because it's just, I find that more interesting than going to a show and seeing a person try to do perfect, you know, like, rhymes and perfect breath control, because like, you know, I'll lose a whole line if I get to jump around and maybe throw something at somebody or something.
Well, just that, I mean, and that DIY like sensibility runs through like everything you do, not just in your performance, but like also just the, you know, how you like, I hate to say like package yourself, but you know, like just how you come across.
Yeah, and I mean, it's very nice of people to get what I was going for, because I very much wanted it to be like an interactive thing where, you know, like somebody described like my website as going to a live show on the internet every week or like every month, where like you get this whole different experience, because I'll send you all these songs and then like you can talk to me, like I'm very accessible. I always laugh when people are like, I hope this gets to the right person, or like, can you tell your person
gonna get who handles all merchandise? Your people.
And you're like, no.
You're like, I am all my people.
Yeah. I am my
like,
people.
You know, when you order merch from me, I write your address with a pen on the package. Like, it's not, you know, this is not a big operation. So, you know, I like the DIY stuff. I mean, I'm not saying that I wouldn't sell out if anybody wants to pay me. If you want me to do the Tostitos Presents Adam Warrock show every night, I am perfectly happy to talk about how great Tostitos chips are.
And we should really pause now to talk about Tostitos.
Yeah, because I was going to say, that was my next question. What are your thoughts on Tostitos?
Oh, you Tostitos had that question too. That's
so crazy. Be aware that you're not being paid for Tostitos yet, so.
I love Tostitos, man. I actually enjoy Tostitos very much. Chips and salsa, man.
I agree.
Are there any other, was there like a competing salsa dipping chip? Like, what's the competing chip? I can't even think of one.
No, that's...
It's whatever the supermarket version
is.
Yeah,
whatever the local maker is. What is it, Troyer Farms or something?
They make a... Hers.
But who gets that? Because they don't have the scoopable nachos.
Oh, the scoops.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, man is eventually has evolved to now have scoops. And it's true form, I think.
But get that. Have you seen the taco that actually has a flat bottom to it?
You realize all those, like, comic book stereotypes we've been working so hard for decades to erase.
I want to research who invented the Tostitos scoops.
Yeah.
That guy got like the hugest promotion ever.
Yeah. Why wasn't it thought of, you know, earlier?
It was like, yeah, it's a very recent thing.
You know what it was? Is something happened on the line that got screwed up. Some poor guy got fired, and then the guy that fired him took it to his boss and said,
"Oh,
hey,
man, you're such a glasses half empty."
Yeah. That's exactly.
I think
what
it's
I'm
like guys sitting around a table, and they're like, "Man, I wish chips were better scoopers." And they're like, "Why don't we just make a chip that's a scoop?" And they're like, "You got a raise just now, Bob."
Yeah, because I was gonna say it's not like we didn't have the technology to do it, you know. It's not like we needed this advanced Tostito scoopable nacho technology. It's like the taco with the flat bottom. What, tacos all of a sudden just started snapping? Like, so we got off a little topic here.
I want to see this link. All right, I want to see you do a link. Let's do this. Just a cold link. What are you guys thinking of X-Men books? You know, like...
Oh,
well, let's talk some. Did you have a few things, Adam, you wanted to talk about that's going on in the world of
comic books? Yeah. Well, first thing up, this last week, it seems like we've been introduced to a lot of our movie trailers for Marvel. For Super Bowl, Avengers was first now released as a trailer, and Spider-Man was
talking earlier.
Has gotten a trailer. So I was wanting to know. Any opinions on that? I guess first we'll talk up. Let's talk out Spider-Man first. What does everybody think?
Well, we know Adam hates it because he mentioned that earlier.
I don't know if I hate the movie.
Not you, our guest.
Oh,
Adam.
That one? Oh, see, that did get confusing. Well, no. For me, though, Spider-Man, you know, that movie really actually was one thing that brought me back in the comic books. So to see that go, it's like a piece of me goes, because I'm like, you know, I kind of was wanting to, for that the last. But after seeing this trailer, it looks interesting, but it doesn't still fit my feel of, you know, the fun type of Spider-Man. I had it seemed like a little more action, but will I go see it? Probably.
See, I actually...
Probably.
Probably.
Probably. I'll go see
it. See, I actually had the same response that our guest Adam had, like... I had, honestly, not a lot of expectations for that, and then I saw the trailer, and whatever they did worked for me, because I was like, you know, hair standing up just a little bit. I'm like, oh,
it's the
wow.
Clips, man. It's the little clip of him quipping that dude that you're like, yeah, that's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, that little moment of him being like, really, you think I'm a cop, the guy in the blue and red suit? You're just like, yes, I love this movie. I'm in. You know?
I agree. Like, I was so, like, worried. But then, you know, hearing him talk, seeing him in the costume just made me feel excited again.
With the initial preview or pictures that came out, I thought, oh, no, emo Spider-Man. I was not looking forward to it. I can understand Tobey Maguire maybe wants to move on, but why couldn't they continue James Bond?
Supposedly it was more of a debate with what Sony and Sam Raimi, they didn't agree with what they wanted to do. I guess he didn't really want to do Venom in the third movie, but Sony was really pushing Venom.
Don't do Venom, but to go back to the beginning.
Well, I guess it was all up to Sony at the end.
Yeah, and then to add this, the story of the parents, I didn't care for it.
But see, to me, it strikes me as a DC 52 style soft reboot.
That's what it does to me. But the only problem that I can see with that is it's had a hard time working. The only thing it really has worked with in these movies has been Hulk. The Incredible Hulk made a comeback, but that was because the first one was incredibly horrible.
The Hulk needed it desperately, and that second
it really wasn't the greatest superhero movie.
The Ang Lee Hulk compared to the second Hulk movie, night and day. So that was it. Worked.
What do you guys think non-comic fans' reaction is going to be to the Lizard as a villain?
That's
going to
sell it.
I think it's going to sell it
to 8-year-old boys.
I think when they,
it's a toy.
The more I've seen, I've gotten more hopeful, and it's Spider-Man, so it's not like I'm going to skip it.
Funny because to me, I think that without knowing the full backstory of the Lizard, that it's a really stupid villain.
What's there to tell?
I see your point, Adam, because I looked at it and, you know, anyone that's a 20-something or older that's not a comic fan, I totally see them having the reaction. But then you look at it and taking comic fans totally out of the equation, it's very easy to see that, oh, Lizard's a toy. Yeah. Lizard's an awesome toy if you're a 10-year-old boy.
Yeah, we're judging it as comic fans, but when the general population sees the first clip of the Lizard pouncing out of a dark alley, that they're not going to care where he comes from or just, hey, there's this cool, cool monster that Spider-Man's fighting. That's going to sell.
Go ahead.
I'm all for reboots of Spider-Man until they bring Hobgoblin as a villain. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
I had such hopes that Raimi was going to get to do a Hobgoblin.
I did too.
He would have been so awesome at doing, like, this creepy, like, skin-decaying Hobgoblin monster dude.
Well, the rumor of what he wanted to do before that was always the Vulture. And they always had it cast rumored as John Malkovich. Which I could totally see.
For a fanboy, but, like, most people, it's like, all right, and you're big, and Spider-Man's going to be fighting geriatric man who has ability to fly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the only thing. I could see, what I'm saying is I could see that John Malkovich playing the Vulture. But, I could see that, too. Now, how do you think non-comic book fans who have seen the original movies are going to react to this movie? Do you think it's going to be confusing for them? To go into this thinking that it's going to be the Tobey Maguire movie's just the sequel.
Not confusing story-wise.
I think reboots and remakes are so commonplace now that most people get it.
Do you think they'll totally... Because the only thing I was thinking, I have no idea how it's going
to... They're used to it.
How people will react. Yeah, well, Batman was... Well, it seems like Batman was a longer time, but it really wasn't. It was about 10 years, and it's been 10 years since the first...
The Tim Burton movie stayed with the people... the public opinion.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget... Well, never mind. I was about to say, don't forget the Joel Schumacher. Can forget him. Never mind.
Yeah. Oh, what? We don't know what you're talking about.
Spider-Man 3 probably soured people enough that... They're not going to care that it's a new Spider.
I think it did, but I really, as Nick brought up Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, did it really do that bad for that? I don't know.
Money-wise, it probably did great.
Yeah.
I mean, and did it really did well for the ice pun industry?
Yeah.
The ice pun industry has never been
freeze, chill.
The latex uniform nipple industry.
So much cod pieces. How could I forget them all?
What did you guys think about the Avengers trailer?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And it's all shot in Cleveland. I was actually get to hang out there, which was pretty sweet.
Are we going to see you in there now?
No, I didn't spend the requisite 48 hours in a line.
Aww.
I got bills to pay and comics to buy. So,
do you guys think there's any validity to the rumor that they're both Marvel properties, different studios that Sony is concerned about wanting to sell Spider-Man to get it, you know, to create excitement buzz, that they will go ahead and say, the hell with it, let's have the cameo by Spider-Man in the Avengers either during the movie or after the credits. If it happens, it'd be great.
Because didn't Whedon come out and say that there was no, but I mean, that could be a lie.
Oh, they'll send a bunch of red herrings out. But I think that would be great. You know, I could see this, because my thought is all the scenes after the credits of the Marvel movies have built up to Avengers. So what are they going to do? And maybe they don't have it set up for the next story, but maybe just for fun, for the fans. You have the Avengers kind of clearing the debris and cleaning up and getting, you know, sending whoever the bad guys are off with Nick Fury. And then here comes Spider-Man catching his breath. Hey, guys, sorry I'm late. I finally got it. And they just yell at him, shut up, get out of here. And to me, that would be hilarious.
Well, I don't think so much that they can actually use Spider-Man yet, because I guess in order, being that it's not part of Marvel Entertainment.
But that's the thing, that both studios just agree and say, hey.
I don't think it'll happen. That's why they're actually making this movie real quick. They're not just giving up on the movie, because in order, if they did and it waited for a long time, then it's void. They have to keep making the movies. So I don't think Sony would give it up.
Fantastic Four movie.
What's that?
Is it hence the Roger Corman Fantastic Four?
Yeah.
Yep.
And do you think, you know, would Sony give up Spider-Man of all?
No. Well, it's kind of like, it's cross promotion. It's marketing. Nick could probably, you know, tell us
Do they know? Does anyone know who the villains are in this movie yet? Like, other than Loki, obviously. Like
the Skrull rumor.
Yeah, that's the Skrull rumor.
There's a Thanos rumor.
There's a Thanos rumor. I see. The way I thought about it is that I actually always thought that the movie would be Loki and the Skrulls or whatever, alien, whatever, you know, the ultimate alien race or whatever. I thought the post-credits scene would be Thanos. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense.
We saw the Infinity Gauntlet.
See the Skrulls being one of the, like, the dimensions similar to, like, Asgardian, like, of the nine realms. Like, maybe they just do it that way. Because I think if you have an alien race and an Asgardian god of mischief teaming up, like, that's a stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even see that in the comics.
Yeah, that seems like a bit of stretch.
Now, I've heard Red Skull, but I haven't heard whether that's Avengers or Spider-Man.
What? Red Skull would be considered.
The possibility of the Red Skull showing up. Have you heard, is that
Spider-Man?
Is that what it is?
He could be, that his parents are in it, and they were supposed to, Red Skull was supposed to be responsible, I guess, for his death. I haven't got that issue. He has it here, but I've been waiting to buy it.
That'll be interesting with the story of the parents in Spider-Man, because they were involved with Nick Fury.
Yeah.
But, they can't use Nick Fury.
It would explain the Spider-Man cameo if if Marvel lets him use Red Skull and they let Marvel use Spider-Man.
Yeah.
This is such an exciting conversation right now. Like, I'm so full of excitement. Just even talking about what we're talking about right now is so awesome.
And hey, don't forget we've got, Ghost Rider coming out this weekend, I think.
Yeah, now that's a movie I didn't expect to have a sequel.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to go see it.
What happened there? I mean,
Nicolas Cage is a big comic fan.
It's so crazy, though. Like, it's like the kind of movie he would make. Like, it's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look bad, though. It really doesn't. So, I mean, I might give it a try.
Have you guys ever seen anything Neville Dean and Taylor make, basically. I don't care what it is. I love the Crank movies so much that, like, they are insane people, and they will do whatever they feel like doing.
Did anybody here listen to How Does This Get Made podcast?
Yes.
No.
They did the Crank one, and they were talking a little bit about Ghost Rider, and just the idea of it being like this what do you call the like a grindhouse style film, and like it's going to be like, you know, like cheesy wink action, you know, 70s fun. Like, that makes sense to me. This could be pretty fun.
Basically what Daredevil's origins are rooted in.
Ghost Rider.
Totally.
That same 70s sensibility. Actually brought up a topic. You know, of like, yeah, I mean, it could totally fit.
Visually, it looks great.
What I say. Daredevil. Hey, did you notice at the beginning of the trailer for Ghost Rider, it says Marvel Knights instead of Marvel?
Yeah, they've done that before. I think that's what they do when they put a movie out that they don't want to, like, bleed into their, like, continuity for the Avengers movies, or distance themselves potentially if it doesn't do well.
Do you think we might see more characters like Daredevil or stuff like that as movies because of that?
They make money, they'll do it. I I mean, I think so too. I don't know. I mean, Daredevil seems like an easy formula to make a movie.
Yeah.
They just did so poorly the first time around.
Now, we have talked about the director's cut. The director's cut is a lot better, but it's still...
Well, it's got more Coolio in it, which makes any movie better, just by that.
But he didn't, you know, go about Gangster's Paradise, so, you know. That was already used in a movie, so...
So about those X-Men.
Yeah. We're going to see, you guys have a couple copies, I'm sure, left over of the Wolverine and the X-Men number 5, the big creative change-up. Left field. Adam was talking about this a little bit earlier because he's read it already. It's a big departure, big difference.
Yeah, but it looks like in some of the solicits they've already got out that Bocciolo is coming back. So it's
I think it's a break similar like what Morrison's run, which I'm going to probably compare this book to a lot. You know, there's a core artist, you know, and then there's people that come in and out.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to be a very... I mean, the arc is pretty much very contained in the school. It's very episodic. So, like, it seems like it's going to be over pretty quick. I hope? I don't know. That's probably the wrong word.
It's also you really thin.
It's, like, we talked about this earlier before we recorded, but, like, it was almost like that book was too good for the first three issues that, like, how... Like, what could you possibly do when it has to come back down and be, like, a regular serial book?
Yeah.
That would at all be comparable to what they did with those first three issues. And then there's no, like, new Hellfire Club. Like, come on.
Right.
It's tough to love as much as the first three.
The formula was so good that any change of ingredients is going to feel like, you know, not the same thing.
What do you guys think of Uncanny right now?
I'm not enjoying it as much as I'd hoped.
Really?
I love Wolverine and the X-Men. Like you guys said, that those first few issues, that first issue alone blew me away. I didn't expect to enjoy a first issue that much. But Uncanny, I was on board.
It's such a different book, and it's such a different feel. You know, like, Wolverine and the X-Men feels like this kind of, like, contained, like, romp, crazy, almost, like, bordering on a Morrison kind of feel of, like, where these new characters or all these things are happening that are... you know, anything can happen. Where Uncanny feels like the hardcore superhero team book that, like, you at the end of it, you kind of, like, don't know if, like, you should like them or not.
Well, they really, that's what, I feel in like the they first really issue...
It. Oh, sorry.
In the first issue, when they were setting the premise, and Storm said, let's see a show of hands, who in this room has at one time been labeled a supervillain, I thought I kind of like, you know, the X-Men with a checkered past. But in the last few issues with Sinister... I don't know what they're trying to do. I can't put my finger on it.
They blew it. They blew it by having Sinister as the first villain. It just didn't work at all.
Are they buying into that the analogy that I think it was Newsarama that this is the X-Men as the authority? Because it's just if that's what they're trying, it's I don't feel like it's working.
Yeah. I'd love to jump into X-Men. I just, the only problem is it's not that I don't like X-Men. I love X-Men, but there's so much to it. I already have so much on my list right now that I get too much over my budget and I just can't afford it.
X-Men.
I know. And
it feels self-contained. It doesn't feel like you have to know.
I know, but the thing is I want to jump into
those first three Wolverine events. And I mean, it's also worth mentioning that I just finished I've been catching up with a lot of books because I was traveling so much, and so I just finished the Dark Angel Saga from Uncanny X-Force, and, like, the last issue of Uncanny X-Force, the chapter 8 or 7 or whatever, like, that is truly the best that's, like, the best Rick Remender you could ever possibly get. You know, like, it's weird, it's dark, it's twisted, there's that amazing moment between Psylocke and Archangel.
Like, I
don't
want to
spoil
that.
It for anyone.
Yeah.
But it's this emotional moment that Remender is so good at doing. Like, he's so good at, like, because he's such a, like, foul-mouthed, twisted, dark dude that, like, you always forget that he's so good at that, and then he slips that in, and it's just, like, I read that, and I was so blown away by, like, the entire like journey you take from like Uncanny X-Force 1 all the way up until that issue where like Genesis comes back and everything kind of comes together. Like, it makes me sad that the Otherworld arc that has started is, again, it's the same thing as Wolverine and the X-Men. It's just not as, like, it's not as good after something so grand and, like,
well, you
awesome.
Know, we were, Colin, who's not here tonight, the owner, he and I were talking about that yesterday, and we were both saying, you know, a big thing with X-Force is it feels like the bar got set so unbelievably high with that Dark Angel saga that it's just one of those things where it's hard to follow up no matter what you do. So
that's going to be one of the great, like, X-Men stories of all time. I mean, yeah. There's no question.
It's so, it's just like, and then the designs that, was it Opeña that was doing that?
Yeah.
Like, the designs of the horsemen, like, the first horsemen.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, man. And the story, the backstories of them, like, it's just like, that whole book,
it feels like an event.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's Rick Remender doing, you get the impression that they were like, we're going to put Rick Remender on this book. We're going to kind of let him do what he wants to because, you know, like, all this other stuff's happening and, you know, people will probably just read this book because of Deadpool. And, like, he probably, like, made this grand scheme and they were like, keep doing it. And then it became, like, this amazing story that, like, actually sells well, too. That, like, I'm so happy that he got to get it to, like, whatever, like, 19 issues, right? That's how far it went. Like, oh, man. It's, like, one of the best... Yeah, that whole end of that saga is, like, one of the best experiences I've had reading. And Wolverine and the X-Men 1 through 3 are some of the best experiences I've had reading comics as long as I can remember. And that's pretty stunning.
Yeah. No, I wholeheartedly agree. Nick and I have been, you know, praising the virtues of those Wolverine and the X-Men issues since day one. They've just been,
I mean,
like,
just, I reread them. I look at these, like, these new characters, and I'm like, you can kind of, like, I want a, what's Gladiator's kid's name, like, Warbird, or no?
Kid Gladiator?
Kid Gladiator. Like, I want a story just on him.
Yeah.
Like, I want a story just on the Brew.
Oh,
like,
Brew's fantastic.
I love Brew. It is fun that these new characters, it feels like they've caught on so fast. That.
Well, when you read the new Wolverine and X-Men, you'll get, I think it's setting up a nice Brew thing. That's happening.
Do you get
so.
The sense that Brew is, you know, that he's portrayed as this sweet, nice kid, but he's going to turn into something very dark and sinister down the road?
Could yeah, be. That's the I mean, kind of... same thing with Genesis. Like adding him onto the book, you know, is, you know, it adds this other wrinkle. Like, I would have thought that all the X-Men characters I needed in my life were already created, you know?
I like that. I like that statement.
But no.
It's nice, too, because the whole the school thing reminds me of another book that I actually fell off. I read, like, the first 10 issues, and I just totally fell off and haven't caught up with it. But I saw the ad, the, like, two-page splash ad for, like, the Runaways and Avengers Academy crossover that's going to happen soon. And that,
yeah.
Like, I really love Avengers Academy. Like, I love those first 10 issues so
it's
much.
It's a great book. I wish I could push
book.
It on more people.
Yeah,
it's tough because they're all new characters.
To read a book,
you know, like,
not reading right now, it would be that. There's so much going on there. There's so much, like, Marvel continuity that's all meeting, like, in one place, but it's not, like, so, you know, difficult to pick up. Like, they do it in such a way that's not crazy. Like, I used to read the, and I forget, I want to feel like it's a Tsunami title, but I don't remember what, that Sentinel.
Yeah. Yeah. That...
Like, that kid, like, hasn't been in anything since then.
Yeah. Nope. It's been a while.
And it was just kind of cool to see him. Like, you know, they didn't throw it away. They didn't, like, reboot him or whatever. They just, like, plugged him in and, I don't know. It was. It's just a fun book.
That book was probably out, what, 2003?
Yeah.
So that's been a while.
Like, I feel like it was a Tsunami title, which I don't even know if anybody remembers that imprint.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there was like Jubilee, Sentinel, Namor.
The Human Torch was the big one for me because, like, I'm a huge Scotty Young fan, and, like, you know, like, I'm like right behind me. I have this like print he signed of Human Torch in the hoodie and, like, the headphones.
Yep.
Huh. Like, I just love that street art juxtaposition on superheroes. The same reason I'm a huge Jim Mahfood fan.
Wasn't the Namor book, like, The Adventures of Namor when he was a boy type of thing?
It was,
yeah, it was. Wow,
totally,
that's been a long time.
It was, I don't remember who did it, but it was, like, anime-inspired art. And I remember that there was, like, a competition at some point with, like, the sales between that and one of Peter David's books and... I think that Marvel back in the Bill Jemis days.
Isn't that imprint actually? Since we were talking about Runaways, didn't Runaways start?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mystique, I think too.
And they were all kind of like anime type inspired books, all of them.
I think that's why they called it Tsunami. Yeah, that was. The... Yeah. I don't think they would call that it or unless like Gilbert, maybe Gilbert Godfrey would call it that, but like nobody else. Would.
Did they?
So, Avengers Academy. It reminds me of New Warriors. Like,
oh yeah,
that's what. And I like we talked about that because I made that New Warriors EP because that New Warriors classic. I mean, those books came out right at the time when I was, you know, in my early teens, or I don't remember exactly what year, preteens or something, but I love those first 25 issues of New Warriors Classic are still to this day maybe my favorite run of, like, almost any book. And it's, like, it's because it allows people to be melodramatic. You allow them to be melodramatic because they're teenagers, and of course they're going to be like that. So you forgive them for being dramatic and emotional, whereas if they were grown people, you'd be like, oh, shut up, you know, like, yeah. Just get over it, you know? But, like, because they're, like, kids who are damaged and, you know, they're alone and they're finding, like, strength in each other, like, it has this extra emotional kick, especially when you're a kid and you're reading it. Like, when I was a kid and I was reading, like, that Marvel boy trial where like his dad was beating him. It was like the most like emotionally devastating thing I ever read, man.
Yeah.
That's interesting the way your age, looking at the books through the eyes of whatever teen. That I feel that way about the original run of New Mutants and none of the reboots or the relaunches have ever
captured that.
Yeah, they never appealed to me like that first series.
There was so much going on in that book that on a bunch of different levels, that original New Mutants book, that it was just like, you know, the art was something that was unlike anything that was coming out at the time. The stories were weirder, you know, but it had like Magneto as the headmaster. Yeah. I mean, it was just such a weird, cool time.
Warlock is still to this day one of the weirdest characters that I can ever remember. Like, he's such a weird creation of the Marvel Universe. I'm always just like...
Especially with Sienkiewicz drawing him.
Yeah. Him and Sideshow was his name? Do I got that right? No, not Sideshow. What was the character's name on Avengers Initiative who was like a clown?
Oh, yeah.
He was like the same type of character, and I don't remember his name.
I'll have to think about it, but yeah, you're right. It was like it didn't feel like you should have been in there.
He didn't. He was like he was like Batmite. Like he wasn't supposed to really be there.
Oh man, I have to remember that. But that character actually was briefly in the New Warriors, but there was a time period where everybody was like Scarlet Spider used to be in the New Warriors.
Yeah,
but you know, Adam, you were saying that about the New Warriors, and I agree with you. I've been, I think we're probably close to the same age because I remember those New Warriors issues coming out being, you know, like, you know, 10, 11 and thinking, oh man, these guys are so cool. You know, they're tackling quote unquote real world issues. Like, but I've been, you know, chasing that experience ever since. And it's like, anytime one of those characters pops up in something, I'm grabbing it. And I definitely agree with you. This Avengers Academy,
it's the closest thing.
Yeah. You know? Because Marvel's been trying to recapture that same feel themselves, and I think this is the closest they've come since the New Warriors of, you know, kind of hitting that mark and getting that feel.
But it was like when I was right around that time, it was New Warriors, it was that 90s Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh yeah.
And then it was Peter David's X-Factor.
Oh yeah.
Their first run after the Jim Lee X-Men Blue and Gold team started. Those three books are still to this day like my favorite. Those are my favorite runs from like my youth, and that's why I did EPs for the New Warriors and then Peter David's X Factor too, because like those were such iconic storylines. The whole like multiple man couldn't absorb that multiple of himself, and then the multiple convinced him that he was the multiple, and it's just like so dark and weird.
And that Larry Stroman art in those early issues, just that. That kind of blew me away as a 13-year-old kid.
Yeah, but we were actually, me and Kurt Franklin and Chris Haley, who do a webcomic, letsyoufriendsagain.com, there's their free plug. we were all at the comic store yesterday, and we go to the comic stores on Tuesday because we know the owners and we get to like look at the new comics. And we end up sitting around talking for like 4 hours, just like goofing around. And we pulled out all the Guardians of the Galaxy 1 through 25 just to find that one cover where Vance Astro finds Captain America's shield and he can like take his suit off.
Oh yeah.
And like he turns into this like real, he looks like Bruce Springsteen. Like,
yes. He had like the mullet and
yeah. It's so dumb looking back on all that stuff. We took out all the Image comics and we got in this huge discussion about all the Image number ones because and how the business started up, just because like that was right when we were all turning like 12 or 13. And like to this day we pulled out those Wildcats covers and we still think they are the coolest looking things, like even now. Knowing that these stories are terrible and they go nowhere. You're just like, this still looks so cool, you know?
Well, I was at the time, like right as Wizard first came out, like I started my first issue of Wizard was 2, and I just remember like it was the first time that I got to read like hype for stuff coming up.
Yeah.
So when things came up, like I was like way more excited than I was when I was a little kid because like I had more anticipation. And like those early Image books, like right around that same time, and some of those Valiant books, like the hype machine was on so much, and I was like, these characters are gonna be better than Spider-Man.
Well, the thing I remember is my comics shop didn't do free previews. But in a lot of those early 90s books, there was a company called Entertainment This Month that did ads in the books. It was like them and another company called American. But the Entertainment This Month was their pre-order side of the business. So it was like every month you'd be flipping through X-Men and they'd be spotlighting, you know, what was coming up in 2 months. And it was like the next huge thing that was going to change your life. As a, and I remember being a 13-year-old kid like, man, I got to get that.
By the way, the character you guys Slapstick. Are thinking about, Slapstick.
Yeah, I looked it up too.
Oh, yeah. I remember Slapstick.
Slapstick. And he was the one who, like, beat the crap out of Gauntlet.
Yep.
Oh, man. Who would have expected that?
I think I had one of his trading cards. Like, I swear, I didn't know anybody that was into, like, into comics that didn't do the Marvel trading cards.
Oh, those are what got me collecting.
I still have those in a binder in my closet. I know exactly where they are.
I know. Awesome. I have a closet right next to me, and I have the first four series as complete sets.
I do too, Nick.
That's awesome.
Fleer and Ultra X-Men.
The X-Men cards, too, were the ones drawn by Jim Lee.
The Jim Lee set?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So good. It's amazing.
Right around Fatal Attraction was like the peak of my, like, could X-Men get any better, you know?
Yeah.
And I was getting those Fleer Ultra X-Men cards and going back and getting everything.
I grew up in a very small town in the middle of nowhere in the Midwest, and the only place that had those was the local mom-and-pop video store. And I, like, I think I bought their entire box, but I bought it a pack at a time, you know, just going in. Every week.
They were just like, just take it.
What was cool about it was, like, with the cards, they were like trailers to comic books, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Here's a character, here's a tease about his history, here's a little fact you didn't know about him, and it's like, I dare you not to buy these books.
Yeah, here's an issue he appears in that's, you know, critical to this character.
So then you're like, I don't care what it costs, I want that issue, you know?
Here's how bad those cards were like drugs, is that I actually traded in hologram cards for credit at the comic store to buy more comics because I had multiple hologram cards and they would awesome. Take them because I was like, how much can I get for this, man? You know, like, oh, six bucks.
You really
bucks.
Need your Magneto or your Venom hologram?
Well, and it's thanks to those trading cards that I look on the shelves at Colin's shop and I look at Atlantis Attacks and the Evolutionary Wars. And I know they're horrible stories, but part of me wants to buy those omnibuses. Just because I have a trading card. I have the trading card for Evolutionary Wars and Atlantis Attacks.
Well, like, my friend Jay and I, like, we started, you know, comics around the same time, right around, like, third or fourth grade. And, you know, we got those cards, you know, like, years later. It was the one issue for us, it was, like, the big deal, was Wolverine 10. Because there was a card that was, like, one of the greatest battles.
Uh-huh.
It was like, this is the first time Sabretooth and Wolverine fought. And to us, we were like, well, they've been fighting forever, right? You know, right. Like, we didn't know that it wasn't that long ago and that, you know, we did it. We just figured, well, Sabretooth and Wolverine, like, they're like the Joker and Batman. Like, they've been fighting
forever.
And, you know, like, years later when I got the book, I was like, this is the book that I, like, you know, went crazy about.
Your holy grail.
This is the book.
Now it's like I have books that are, like, you know, quite a bit better than that.
Oh, can I also, while we're on the topic of 90s comics, I would be remiss, my friends would kill me if I didn't actually talk about the thing that I always talk about with people, is how much I love Maverick as a character.
Oh, yeah.
And how it is my mission to convince one of the creators that I know who works for Marvel to somehow bring Maverick back. See, I know he died from the Legacy Virus. Whatever. We can figure a way around it.
Yeah. Do you know how many people have died and come back from the Legacy Virus?
Yeah.
Well, I was telling them
that's easy.
I was telling them that they should bring back, like, a new Maverick and make it a woman or, like, something. Like, I just want somebody in that mask with a bunch of guns.
What if it's a woman, but she's also, like, a governor of Alaska?
The governor.
Well,
that's a Maverick.
Hey, Sabretooth is back. Maybe team, what was it, Team 6? Was that what they were called?
Team X.
Team X.
Didn't Maverick have a daughter? There you go. Yeah.
It was in that cartoon. Man. It was cool. It was actually, Wolverine and the X-Men had Maverick in it.
Yeah, I remember that episode.
Huh. Yeah, was it Chris Bradley or David North? Those were the two Mavericks?
I think so.
Yeah.
To bring it back to modern comics, I want to say one thing is that one of the books I really love is Mark Waid's Daredevil right now.
Yeah.
And one of my goals is to get a T-shirt made that has big block letters on it that just says "I am not the Daredevil."
Yes.
You know that they make that, right?
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh, Mighty man, Fine, I gotta order
like that T-shirt. I think they're called Mighty Fine. They do everything for like Marvel that's quick. So like I have like a Magneto was Right shirt from them and. But no, I'll tweet it to you. But they actually make that shirt. That's the exact one. And in the ad of it, they show the him coming out for Christmas with the "I am not Daredevil."
I want to perform with that shirt on, just like as a little shout out to people who get it, because there'll be a lot of people who don't get it probably. But that panel made me like laugh out loud. I was just like, "Oh, it's so great!
Yeah,
it's perfect."
That was it's been a great book. Just and what a comeback for Daredevil after Shadowland.
Yeah,
Shadowland was a disaster.
And for it to be that quick for him to come back from that, because I mean that book just really destroyed it for a lot of people. Just they were canceling, and I'm really happy. And you know, I jumped right onto the book. It's a great jumping on point. It's just a lot of fun. A fun Daredevil book.
It's you're right. I mean, it's not saying that everything didn't happen before, but it's sort of not spending a lot of time on it.
Exactly.
You know, just moving forward.
Yeah, they did a really good job.
Something I love about Daredevil. They never say it never happened. They just move on.
Well, that's what I kind of like about the character. Like I was saying, when we were talking about, you know, our little Daredevil special episode. I like that he's such a real damaged person that he's not talking about what happened because he's kind of psychotic, you know.
Yeah.
That thing happened, and like a totally with it person would you know go to a therapist and talk it through and deal with it. He's just like, yeah, I'm gonna ignore it. What else we got?
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
What else we got, guys? Are we hitting the wall?
Are we?
Only if you want to talk about the AVX preview pages. I think that was our last big thing we thought about.
Sure.
Is that the What is the Phoenix stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, today...
It looks like, you know, like everybody thought it's the Phoenix coming and the Avengers going one way and the X-Men going another way.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like Civil War, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I am too. I think it just seems like... I don't know. At first, I was a little worried, mainly because of what I have to get, what I'm going to get, and stuff like that. But mainly the story, I think it has a lot of potential. I really do. And these first pages that I've been reading actually brought me back into it, that I'm just like, I'm excited for this. You know, so I'm all for it.
This has to make reading through Second Coming worth it for me. It's pulling double duty for me. Because this is what I thought the end of Second Coming was sort of going to...
I
did
and then
too.
It just stopped, and I was like, I guess that's it. I guess it's done. Like,
yeah. I think you can probably start placing your Vegas bets. I don't think Cyclops is coming out of this one alive.
this
Why does everybody think Cyclops is going to die?
It just has that feel. I don't know.
Maybe people just want Cyclops to die.
I don't want him to die, but
that's not what I heard.
Until about 5 years ago, and now I like him.
Yeah, I think every event book that comes out with the X-Men, somebody says that Cyclops is going to die in it. That is kind of odd. Yeah, but all in all, I just... Now, wouldn't it be interesting, though, if everybody thinks it's Hope, do you think it's going to go off somewhere else and it's going to be some other character?
That it's going to be like... What, like...
Iron Rue? Fist?
Well, I mean, your next big character that they keep talking about is Scarlet Witch.
Sure.
That would be interesting, but that's a lot of power for one person.
What better way to freak out the Avengers?
Yeah.
The person who destroyed them with her great power, now she's got even more power.
And that's the person they're kind of after in this Avengers Children's Crusade, which has been a really good book, by the way.
I haven't read that, and it seems like now all of a sudden, hey, you better read Children's Crusade.
That's really interesting. It would be like Hope would be the one that beats her, right?
Yeah.
Huh. I actually never even, it's funny how I've never even actually thought about that. And, everyone's just like, oh, it's going to be Hope.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And then also one thing that just blows me away is the first cover, Ultron standing in the middle of it. Of all the characters, like, and, you know, the Ultron War thing is coming up is what they keep saying. You know, they had the point issue. But Ultron.
If that comes up, I think we need a remix.
Man, you know what, man? I could write so many more songs about the whole Ultron. Hank Pym stuff. I find that character and all the peripheral characters around him so fascinating because it's so messed. It's such a messed up, like, just doesn't... It's so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Everything Hank Pym related is so, like, messy, you know, as opposed to, like, the rest of them.
It's always fascinated me, too, that, you know, he's reached this point that he's become this messed up character, which most people would agree is incredibly fascinating for that. And if you hear, you know, some of the old creators talk back in the day that a lot of that stuff was just a throwaway accident, you know, never intended the way it came across. And
which is funny because some of that stuff makes, like, your best story sometimes, you know?
I love Hank Pym as a character. It's such a comics character. Like, it's the only way to describe it.
Well, the guy can't win. Like, everything's... I mean, he was even taken by a Skrull. Like, you know, he just can't seem to win anytime. Everybody's always after him. And then Ultron is like the never-ending, like... You know, thing.
Stop,
that just
stop building him.
Just yeah, building him. just stop it. You know. And then Yocasta, who's like lost it too somewhere, right? She's been like infected with the Ultron.
That's why, like, the recent Avengers annuals with Wonder Man were to me some of the best comics that came out last year because it was this is somebody that's angry at the Avengers and wants to stop the Avengers, and you can kind of see their point of view.
Yeah, I think that's what made him such a and. To think that Wonder Man would—I be saying this—that Wonder Man seems like such an interesting character all of a sudden.
I know,
because he's had nothing for a long time. He's just been like in the background, and you know, just to have this character, what he's you know thinking and everything, and then yeah, you kind of agree with him. You're like, well, yeah, the Avengers never fix anything,
and like all the bad that they've you know inadvertently caused just through you know, I guess just winging it. You know, every day they're out there, they're just winging it. There's a point to be taken. I mean, he doesn't have an answer, though. He doesn't say, well, all right, without the Avengers, we would have been dead. You know, with the Avengers, we were almost dead. So, but I still, like, he's got a valid point.
Yeah.
And that's what was cool. I mean, you don't see a threat that's like, you can kind of go, like Dr. Doom, you know, like, well, yeah, I guess life would be better in a totalitarian state where I was kissing Doom's boot, you know, every day. Like, that'd be okay.
Well, I think the ending of that book, though, of the annual books, were really what was really got me. Because I was like, okay, is this going to tie in? Because now that's something Scarlet Witch related, you know?
Yeah.
And what's to say about Hawkeye? That was my other question. Hawkeye was the same situation.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of questions.
I've never heard a character, you know, in comics ever say, like, one of his, like, motivations for, like, doing something is the fact that, like, why not? I don't even think I'm real. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. But all in all, I'm actually for this and everything that they've had, you know, as events coming up, I'm actually excited for it. They just have to get to them, you know, and it seems like they're being like the Ultron thing's been what, a year now?
Yeah.
That it was introduced to us, you know. And then how long till then, you know, until
after ADX? I hope so, man, because I've been pretty bummed out with the event, Marvel summer event books lately.
Yeah. And I'm waiting for something just, I don't know, everything that I've seen so far after this that they've just hinted at, we haven't seen much coming from, but it seems like good ideas. So I'm actually kind of excited for all of it. Cool. Avengers Children's Crusade is another one. It's hard to say. Avengers Children's Crusade has just been a really good book. Actually, of the events books, even though it's taking so long just to get done, it's been good. It's been a really fun book. And with like so many characters in for one book, you know, you have your Young Avengers, you have the Avengers, you have the X-Men, you have Doom, you know, you have all sorts of characters that are being written for her. So it's such a big event as well. I think that's what you said before, Nick, that you thought they just write – he's writing for – I forget who writes the book. As you were saying, that he's just writing for so many characters.
It's tough. I mean, there's a lot of different – like, there's a lot of screen time being, you know, spent on a lot of different characters. So, I mean, that's certainly a challenge for any writer.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think he's handled it well, and I think once it's all collected, you can read it all in one big chunk. I think it's going to be one of those books that people really remember.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
All right.
Oh, man, I just saw the tweet of this Daredevil shirt. I wonder if they have, like, 2-day shipping on this because I leave soon. I really want this so bad. Anyways.
It's pretty amazing. Sorry, but
it's awesome.
No, I agree. I'm wanting that shirt as well.
I mean, the other shirt they have, too, like, if you're going to get an order that I have, it's an awesome shirt, is the Grant Morrison-era Quentin Quire Magneto was Right shirt. I mean, yeah. That would be a cool shirt to, like, you know. Like, you want to talk about some swagger on stage, that's a good one.
Do they still make Civil War shirts of, like, Cap was right and Iron Man was right?
Okay.
I really need a Cap is right shirt. I still believe that.
All right.
Cool.
Well, I think we're reaching the time. Yeah. Adam, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. This was great.
Thank you for having me. Just before I leave, I should say that I like Animal Man and Batman and Robin because people always say that I never talk about these I really love Batman and Robin and Animal Man.
You know, that's all right because we get accused of not talking about Marvel enough, so it balances out.
Yeah,
oh, that's good. I could talk about Marvel for weeks and months, but DC is a little slim because I didn't, like I said, didn't really grow up with it. So, yep. You know.
Because we've had so many podcasts that we've actually mentioned Animal Man in or Batman. I mean, we even had in Swamp Thing, and we haven't had twice on here Scott Snyder. So.
Yeah. Oh, Colin said, "If you ever want to put out a song that's an intro to our podcast, he would be fairly receptive."
Yeah,
yeah. I will figure out a nice hook. Pittsburgh themed hook. By the way, for the people listening, I was born in Pittsburgh, so I was of course going to do this podcast.
So you're totally welcome.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for doing this. This is a real treat for us.
Yeah, and
thank you for having me.
Anytime you ever want to come back on, you know, feel free.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I liked getting to talk about 90s comics.
We all read them.
Yep. All right, man. Thanks a lot. And everybody else, we're going to sign off.
Yep, take care.
I'll actually be in Pittsburgh for next week, so look forward to that.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, be here. Nick will actually be here, except, you know, if you're listening, you know, it's going to be the same thing. So.
It'll be the same thing. I'll be slightly clearer.
Yeah, he'll be clearer than iPad Nick. All right, everyone. Take care.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
Than a bullet leaping buildings in a single bound. Came from out the shadows cause that's how we get down. I'm in your town. Walk between billionaires and evil scientists. Sorcerer supreme, all the teenagers are buying this. Gamma radiation, nobody could mess with this. Hold steady with venomous symbiotes in my penmanship. Your friendly neighborhood MC back on the scene. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. All I'm seeing is green and red and blue. I hold the shield for America when a soldier out Siberia. Rocking any microphone that's near to ya. Clobbering it till in the coffin you sit. Agenda
agenda for extinction. Bring out the horsemen of the apocalypse. Part of an evil brotherhood, acolytes that believe. Super friends who make beats and cats that MC. It's the area code to the planet that we protect. The Infinity Watch is now back in effect. Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover ducking, pressing the pigs. For all the villains that he's scheming on that doomsday tip. That's how we do it. Superpowered MC who can spit. That's how we do it. Superhuman on these tracks that I flip. Yeah, cause you ain't seen it quite like this. Because that's how we do it in the 616. Let my ruby quartz shades and my colored rings. Laser scope rifles ain't concerned with them other things. These rappers wanna talk about ice chains and fancy cars. Me, I'm trying to build mansion in Asgard. And from the Hellfire Society studio with Cerebro. Mind patterns and rhyme cause I rap about what I feel though. You hear the rhythm and you're hearing the track. I'm here to take it back to days of future past in my raps. I'm the Stan Lee of the streets. Demand things when I speak like your attention and respect when I jam these in the beats. And my tape deck pops, my mixtapes still rock. They're in your system, that's what Soundwave's telling me on the block. Ricky Bobby Drake's the only ice that I rock with. And mental telepathy is the only style that I talk with. Close your eyes, you can listen up in your mind. During this song, been freestyling there the whole time. Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover ducking, pressing the pigs. For all the villains that he's scheming on that doomsday tip. That's how we do it. Superpowered MC who can spit. That's how we do it. Superhuman on these tracks that I flip. Yeah, cause you ain't seen it quite like this. Because that's how we do it in the 616.
Drop the beat out. I wanna go Pietro on these cats, right? Yeah.
Spitting a rhythm that nobody's getting. I'm down to the infinite watches. The wisdom will baffle these women and children. I'm ripping tracks. I go Mark 5 with a power pack. Hawkeye, what I'm aiming at. Stop time, watch your chain react. Can't lie, I'm a brainiac. Little they know, I'm still in the show. I'm filling the streets, unlimited flow. The second of Doc Ock when I'm killing it, yo. Please, shots to your chest. You're rocking a vest like Cable did. I'm hungry as Wally West at a kitchen table. Nobody'll save you, kid. I'm Frank with a gun. I'm Hank with his son. I'm Rob when I skip lunch eating rappers, man. So thanks for the gum. I'm Starch Wallet back before all these banks had a run. I'm Lex Luthor when I rap. I'm trying to blank out the sun. Cause all I see are friendly faces and shifty eyes. Keeping these anonymous commenters honest, making them realize. You love to hate me on the net when I drop. That's why you get no love when you're up on my block. Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover ducking, pressing the pigs. For all the villains that he's keeping on that.